in his 30s. The people around Davies thought he had gone mad. Fortunately, Davies made concerted efforts to be candid and to over-communicate about everything he was doing and why he was doing it. This helped him quickly form relationships with key shareholders, business partners, customers, and employees. Then to communicate with his tens of thousands of employees, Davies tried a bit of everything, from videos and cartoons to countless handwritten notes of recognition. He also created more structured communication programs. He would send regular messages to his top 20, 50, and 150 leaders. Davies then made sure to send monthly email updates to all 75,000 employees around the globe. As a result, Standard Chartered's employees always knew what the boss was thinking. On more than one occasion, Davies was criticized for being too open with his communication. But this didn't quiet him. On the contrary, when Davies' wife of 29 years had a bout with breast cancer during his time as CEO, he sent a candid email to 400 of his top executives explaining exactly what was going on, how he felt, and how it would change his schedule in the upcoming months. And this was not just because it was about his personal life. Davies was also widely known for helping everyone at Standard Chartered to put their families first. One longtime colleague described how amazed he was that Davies took so much time from his busy schedule to be there for him during a similar personal crisis. Davies' candor extended to what he described as courageous conversations or more difficult topics. By his own admission, Davies could be very direct at times and described his style as having an iron fist and velvet glove. Davies also applied this frankness to describing his own personality and shortcomings. He took ownership for his mistakes, and he talked freely about what went wrong. As a result of Davies' extraordinary openness, Standard Chartered's employees could see how much he loved the bank, and they knew that his heart was in the right place. This created a culture in which employees took ownership over their work instead of passing along the blame. It also led to an unprecedented level of trust in their CEO, as they continued to give Davies latitude when he bucked the conventional wisdom. He built trust through relationships. In 2008, when we sat down to talk with Mervyn Davies in his London offices, he had just moved on from the CEO position to one of a non-executive chairman of Standard Chartered Bank. By this time, Davies was a regular on lists of the most influential business people, and he was widely revered beyond the business community. At the time of our interview, banks around the world were in a state of crisis. Almost every major financial institution was facing substantial losses. But as the New York Times and The Economist describe, Mervyn Davies had set Standard Chartered up to be about the only bank in the world that was able to grow through one of the more difficult economic periods in recent history. It was one of the few shining gems in the financial services sector. When Davies began to describe the reasons why Standard Chartered had thrived in this market, his jovial tone turned serious. As he spoke of the real soul and wonderful story of this 150-year-old bank that originated in Calcutta, the passion in his voice turned his fair skin a few shades of red. Davies went on to describe how he had bet his career early on by focusing on two key things: people and corporate social responsibility, even though many shareholders couldn't have cared less about either one at the time. While we would have loved to spend even more time talking to Davies about the latter topic, specifically his contributions to battling HIV/AIDS and cancer globally, to keep our study focused, we attempted to learn more about how Davies had done such an exceptional job of engaging people. So we asked him more about himself on a personal level. As he began to describe his own personality, you could tell that he was exceptionally comfortable in his own skin. In Davies' opinion, the most important aspect of leading people is simply knowing oneself. In a matter-of-fact tone, he described how, as a leader, you must know yourself, know the people around you, and then get on with it. As simple as this may sound, Davies reported that the way he empowered people at times raised red flags. Early on, when he delegated responsibility to employees who had the right strengths and gave them free rein. Others worried that he did not have enough personal involvement in key activities. But placing trust in others to deal with the areas in which they had competence freed Davies to spend the majority of his time developing talent and coaching future leaders. Davies described why he opted to use StrengthsFinder and a strengths-based approach throughout Standard Chartered as a part of his plans for developing people. "We try to be a company that focuses on people's strengths and not their weaknesses. And I think that the more people realize what their strengths are, the more they can really focus on those areas and really specialize and develop," he said. Davies then concluded with what could be one of the most succinct summaries of the strengths approach that we've heard. "If you focus on people's weaknesses, they lose confidence." It is clear from the bank's financial results that Davies was able to create a culture that engaged people's strengths on a daily basis. But one of the most telling parts of our interview was when Davies talked about the pride he takes from watching other people learn and grow. When we asked about his greatest satisfaction at work, he quickly replied that he could go on for half an hour describing how rewarding it was to see the people around him develop and to share in their success. Davies then took on a more personal tone, describing how he had both of his children take StrengthsFinder and how differently he had developed each of them based on their natural strengths. It was easy to hear the passion in Davies' thick Welsh accent when he spoke of the young people he has had a chance to mentor. When we asked him to talk more about it, he replied, "I love doing that. I absolutely love it. I love listening to them and, you know, at the end of the day, I talk a lot, but I think the greatest skill you've got in management is listening." Davies then issued a challenge to any aspiring leader. He explained that the litmus test of a great leader is whether they can quickly write down on a piece of paper all of the people they have developed. If they can't, then Davies thinks those leaders might just have been in the right place at the right time, accidentally and not by design. Not only can Davies assemble a long list of the people and relationships he has invested in over his 15 years at Standard Chartered, but he also expects his people to be able to do the same. It was clear from our conversations with Davies that he is a man who is in his element when leading people and building relationships. At one point in our discussion, Davies talked about the way people energize him even more than money. Again, not what you might expect to hear from one of the world's most legendary banking executives. Yet during Davies' tenure, in addition to all of the international expansion, Standard Chartered Bank's stock price soared and its market capitalization nearly tripled. By doing things his own way, Davies not only achieved unparalleled financial results, but he also built an organization in which each of his employees could, as Davies put it, look back on their careers and realize how much fun they had working for the bank. At every turn, you could see Mervyn Davies' keen strength for relationship building and his relentless positivity about the future. Strategic thinking. The strategic thinking themes are analytical, context, futuristic, ideation, input, intellection, learner, and strategic. Brad Anderson, Chief Executive Officer of Best Buy, is a strategic leader. His top five strengths are context, ideation, input, learner, and connectedness. As you enter Best Buy's corporate headquarters in Minneapolis, you can tell that the company does things a bit differently. The building is modeled after an airport terminal with a massive connecting hub in the middle. This hub is always abuzz with conversations and employees who look like they are genuinely having fun. The environment feels more like a student union on a college campus than a Fortune 500 company's corporate headquarters. At first glance, it is hard to figure out how it would be possible to create this kind of atmosphere, let alone in a company with 150,000 employees. But when we spent some time with Best Buy's CEO Brad Anderson in 2008, it all started to make sense. With his round face, bright eyes, and jovial smile, Anderson certainly doesn't look the part of a chief executive. It's easier to picture him teaching a high school history class than running a shareholder meeting. Very few people radiate this level of warmth and sincerity during an initial introduction. Frontline employees at Best Buy describe Anderson as one of the most approachable people they've met. As much as Anderson's look and demeanor may not fit the conventional CEO mold, his actions and personality wander even farther off the beaten path. Yet over the last 25 years, Anderson took an unknown regional electronics store and helped make it into the largest consumer electronics retailer in America. The amazing story of his career trajectory is only overshadowed by the organization's performance during his tenure. If you look at Anderson's top five themes, context, ideation, input, learner, and connectedness, you might expect to find someone who was an exceptional student at a young age. But he was not. Anderson struggled and had poor grades in high school. That is why it was such a surprise when Anderson's grades began to thrive in college. Once he was free to study the topic of his choice, it opened his mind to a world of endless opportunity. Anderson's realization in college that he could build his life around his innate curiosity and voracious appetite for learning would prove to be critical throughout his career. At the age of 24, Anderson joined Sound of Music, a small electronics retailer in Minneapolis, as a sales associate. After a few years, he became a store manager. Anderson was then asked to join the team at its corporate office. By 1983, the company had changed its name to Best Buy and had 7 stores. The retailer expanded and launched several supercenters over the next few years. By 1986, Anderson had joined the company's board of directors and was working very closely with the company's legendary founder, Dick Schultz. It was around this time that Anderson, Schultz, and a few others began to question the entire model on which electronics retailers operated. At that time, almost every consumer electronics store paid its salespeople based on a commission of how much they sold. As a result, when consumers walked into almost any music or stereo shop prior to 1990, they were mobbed by pushy salespeople trying to close a deal. What's worse, these commission sellers were usually hawking the display models that would put the most cash in their pockets, even though the televisions and stereos were not in stock. When Anderson gathered a focus group of customers and asked them which major electronics retailer they trusted, he recalled how they would simply break into laughter. People felt less pressure walking around a used car lot in those days. As Anderson looked at successful retailers in other industries, he noticed very different business models. One of his early cues came from the experience that grocery stores provide, where everyone is free to browse and they know that products will be in stock. Anderson, Schultz, and team wondered if Best Buy could follow a similar model, one that they thought would be much more likely to please the average customer. But there were major obstacles, from the way manufacturers and distributors operated to the expectations of the thousands of people in sales roles. Anderson and Schultz knew that a decision to follow this new model would send shockwaves through an entire industry. But they also had a hunch that it might be the only way for their company to survive. As Anderson later described to us, that was a breakthrough moment, and it only happened because the company was going to go out of business if we played by the rules. So when Anderson and Schultz made the formal recommendation that Best Buy move away from a commission sales model, they faced intense resistance. Even within the company, there were many skeptics. But when people challenged the idea, Anderson would remind them to think about the next 15 years, not the next 5. Based on this idea, Best Buy implemented a new strategy that would forever change the retail sales model. As a result of this shift, customers no longer felt the pressure of salespeople breathing down their necks, and were now filling into Best Buy stores just to browse. Shortly thereafter, other consumer electronics stores and retailers in other industries followed suit. Anderson's career continued to advance during this time of transition, and he was named Best Buy's president in 1991. From the day Anderson assumed this leadership role, it was clear he wasn't going to fit anyone's preconceived notions of a top corporate executive. Instead of conforming to the new role, this self-described odd duck decided to do things quite differently. While Wall Street analysts, among others, expected Anderson to take a more conventional approach as Best Buy's new president, that's not what he did. Much to their consternation, Anderson would simply disappear for weeks on end in search of new ideas. Instead of poring through trade or business books, he read everything from Rolling Stone to historical biographies. Anderson attended non-electronics conferences in search of bigger ideas. He brought in countless outside experts to challenge Best Buy's thinking. His ideation, input, and learner themes were always at work. By Anderson's own admission, he challenged conventional wisdom to the point that it was radically complained about by his peers. Anderson's insatiable curiosity also led to an unconventional people leadership approach. He quickly surrounded himself with leaders who he knew would challenge his thinking. And he was also careful to select leaders who could effectively develop the strength of those under their charge. Once again breaking the mold, Anderson was as concerned about the personal chemistry of the team members as he was about their experience or technical competence. When we spoke with Anderson, he described how his most senior leaders were wildly different from one another. Yet they found a way to accommodate each other by placing a great deal of trust in each person's unique strengths. Anderson described how he could talk passionately in an executive meeting about his ideas for the future and then turn to see that he had completely lost his CFO's attention. And in turn, when he talked about how his gifted CFO would work through spreadsheets until 8 o'clock at night, Anderson said, "You might as well give me hieroglyphics." This was just one of the many partnerships Anderson formed to complement his strengths and limitations. What may be even more remarkable is the degree to which Anderson was able to stay true to his own strengths in his role as CEO. When we asked him how he was able to provide leadership for more than 150,000 Best Buy employees, Anderson described the critical role of his self-awareness and authenticity. While Anderson may not be a natural at working a room or chatting up a store full of frontline employees, he has developed a unique way to connect with Best Buy's employees, customers, and shareholders as he travels around the world. He simply asks great questions. As one Best Buy employee described, Anderson can walk into a store and make each employee feel like the most important contributor because he asks each person what they're doing, what's getting them excited, and what they're seeing in the store. She went on to describe how she had never seen a CEO do this so well and observed how Anderson is genuinely curious about his people and their own life stories. Once he has this context in mind, it helps Anderson see what needs to happen in the future. While studying successful leaders like Brad Anderson, one of the most revealing items we asked leaders to respond to was, "Please describe a time when you felt like you were in a zone where time almost seemed to stand still." Anderson told us that he feels that way almost any time he is learning something, whether it is from a person, a book, or solving a puzzle. He said, "I find it amazing that I can be 58 years old and seem to know less every day. No matter how much you learn, it just continues to open up more substantial questions and relationships." Anderson went on to tell us about how, the night before our conversation, he had stepped out of a dinner early so he could spend some quality time at a nearby Barnes & Noble before heading home. The voracious learner, who reads several books each week, said that he found at least 28 books he wanted to take home that evening. "It's a disease," he said with a smile. We suspect that there are millions of Best Buy employees, customers, and shareholders who are glad that Brad Anderson let this lifelong curiosity run its course. While his strategic thinking led to a few experiments that did not pan out, Anderson's unconventional approach helped create unprecedented growth. Had you invested $1,000 in Best Buy stock in 1991, when Anderson took over as president. It would have been worth $175,000 by 2008. Not bad for a guy who started at the ground level and spent the next 25 years soaring with his strengths. The collective talent of a team. As you can hear in the stories of these four leaders, they have exceptional clarity about who they are and who they are not. If any one of them had chosen to spend a lifetime trying to be good enough at everything, it's doubtful they would have made such an extraordinary impact. Instead, they've all been wise enough to get the right strengths on their teams, and this has set up their organizations for continuous growth. Unfortunately, very few teams are truly optimized around their strengths. As we learned from working with the top executive team at Hampton, a U.S.-based hotel chain, once a team understands how to leverage each person's strengths, it quickly finds new ways to drive organizational performance. When we first met with Hampton president Phil Cordell, his company and leadership team appeared to be on the right track. With more than 1,500 locations, Hampton was expanding rapidly and had developed a strong consumer brand. Cordell had a leadership team of extraordinarily talented individuals, each of whom possessed a deep passion about the organization and its brand. His team was innovative, creative, and had an impressive track record. Hampton was already well ahead of its competitors, but Cordell wanted to widen that lead. He also hoped to initiate a major international expansion. Cordell realized that what got his team to that point would not be sufficient for the future, given his ambitious goals. As we conducted interviews with each team member of his core executive group, we discovered that they were fiercely loyal to the brand, eager to drive performance, and had great respect for Cordell as the team's leader. But we also found a few potential landmines. Interestingly, the leadership team's loyalty to Cordell had a major drawback. Team members continually escalated their issues to Cordell for resolution instead of working them out amongst themselves. This eroded trust among colleagues, and it also meant that Cordell always had to be the one to take action, thus creating a bottleneck and slowing everything down. Unbeknownst to his team, Cordell spent the vast majority of his day in response mode. He had no desire to be in the middle of all these discussions, nor did he need to be. This was not just a problem of effective delegation. The main issue was that his team members didn't have strong relationships with each other. After several discussions with Cordell, it was clear that his aggressive growth plans were going to stretch, if not break, the team. To develop a plan and lay the foundation for international growth, Cordell would need to be absent for significant amounts of time. In the way the team was functioning, it would all but collapse if Cordell was taken out of the equation for prolonged periods. Cordell needed to build a team so strong that it would hardly skip a beat when he was gone. But to get there, his group needed to confront major issues, one of which was that it was composed of extremely talented individuals who knew how to get things done, but who were always competing to take on more, as one member said. While some of you may be wishing that you had this kind of problem in your workplace, at Hampton, it led to a more divided than collaborative team. After conducting in-depth interviews with each member of the team, along with looking at a composite of their StrengthsFinder results, it became clear that the team needed to build stronger relationships and do it quickly if it wanted to establish trust and meet its ambitious growth plans. Cordell confronted the team's problems as candidly as possible. When members began to talk openly about their challenges, Cordell bluntly said that they had miles to go in developing a shared culture. He described how he needed the team to feel comfortable enough to have tough discussions, which were not happening. He called the lack of trust a deal breaker. The entire team then spent a great deal of time talking about how it could build stronger relationships and trust. Team members quickly realized that they simply didn't spend enough time together. They were all getting so caught up in trying to handle day-to-day requests that they were too busy to think about the team itself, let alone the future. They also realized that they needed much clearer expectations to maximize efficiency and avoid overlap. Even more disturbing was that most of the team members reported having problems balancing their workload with their family lives because the environment had become ultra-competitive. These initial meetings and discussions produced substantial changes. For example, Scott and Kurt, two members of the team who had a knack for building relationships, agreed to dedicate more time to helping strengthen team bonds. Gina passionately described how she could help maximize the strengths of others on the team and beyond, so they have clear expectations and even more room for growth. Judy decided to leverage her ability to stimulate dialogue and ideas to keep the group focused on the future. During one group meeting, the team created leadership brand descriptions that detailed how they planned to leverage their strengths to help the company grow. Soon after these initial discussions, it was clear that Hampton's leadership team was headed in a very different direction. In meetings, instead of getting defensive when Gina would ask questions, the others knew she was just satisfying her need for input. When Judy started in with a big idea, they knew that it was a part of her natural instincts instead of an annoying challenge to the way they were used to doing things. As a group, they agreed to discuss issues collectively before elevating anything to Cordell. In turn, Cordell committed to knock down problems that went to him before going through this process. 6 months after these intensive discussions, the relationships, level of trust, and the leadership team as a whole were thriving. Before these conversations, the team would never have met as a group if its leader couldn't be there. But by this point, thanks in part to Scott taking on the responsibility, the team continued to meet and keep things moving in Cordell's absence. From this strong foundation, the team continued to raise the bar on its own while Cordell focused more time on the international expansion. The teams we have worked with report gaining the most from regular discussions of each person's strengths in the context of the team and its current goals. As you can see from the Hampton Leadership Group's experience, whether a team has been together for 15 days or 15 years, each person benefits from having a basic understanding of the other's strengths. When teams are able to use a common language of strengths, it immediately changes the conversation, creates more positive dialogue, and boosts the team's overall engagement. What strong teams have in common? Once you have the right people on your team, it's relatively easy to tell if you're headed in the right direction. Gallup has been studying leadership teams for nearly four decades, and we have witnessed some telltale signs of strong, high-performing teams. First, conflict doesn't destroy strong teams because strong teams focus on results. Contrary to popular belief, the most successful teams are not the ones in which team members always agree with one another. Instead, they are often characterized by healthy debate and at times heated arguments. What distinguishes strong teams from dysfunctional ones is that the debate doesn't cause them to fragment. Instead of becoming more isolated during tough times, these teams actually gain strength and develop cohesion. One reason great teams are able to grow through conflict is because they have a laser-like focus on results. Top teams seek out evidence and data and try to remain as objective as possible. As a result, while people may have different views, they are united in seeking the truth. Team members can argue, but in the end, they are all on the same side. In sharp contrast, failing teams tend to personalize disagreement, creating territorial divides that then continue to grow. Second, strong teams prioritize what's best for the organization and then move forward. While competition for resources and divergent points of view exist, the best teams are able to keep the larger goal in view. Members of high-performing teams are consistently able to put what's best for the organization ahead of their own egos. And once a decision is made, these teams are remarkably quick to rally around it. One team we worked with had a long, drawn-out debate over whether they should invest in a major new idea. After months of intense discussion, it would have been easy for John, who technically lost the argument, to sit back and sulk after the decision was made. Yet the exact opposite occurred. Like other great team members we have studied, John got over the debate quickly and asked, "What resources do you need from me to make this work?" Once a decision is made, members of great teams rally around to help one another succeed. Third, members of strong teams are as committed to their personal lives as they are to their work. The best teams we studied seem to live a contradiction. Some of the most productive team members work extreme hours and endure amazing levels of responsibility. They sometimes work 60 hours a week and travel frequently, yet they consider their lives to be in balance. They seem to have enough time to do the things they want to do with their families. As hard as they work for the company, they seem to bring the same level of energy and intensity to their family, social, and community life. When we interviewed Standard Chartered's Mervyn Davies, he told us that he takes as much pride in the amount of time he spends with his wife and two children as he does in his bank's extraordinary performance. While this may seem surprising to an outside observer, Davies described how he strives to dedicate 100% of his attention to family throughout the weekend. Davies extends this philosophy to all of his bank's employees, encouraging them to put family first. Our evidence suggests that the most successful teams have members who are highly engaged in their work and highly satisfied with their personal lives. By setting this expectation, which so many others perceive as unattainable, they attract new members who want to do the same. This high level of engagement then sets a powerful example for the entire organization. Fourth, strong teams embrace diversity. Our work with the leadership teams of some of the most innovative and successful companies in the world reveals a simple truth. Having a team composed of individuals who look at issues similarly, who have been the product of comparable educational backgrounds, and who have experiences with similar track records and approaches is not a sound basis for success. Earlier, we outlined why leadership teams need a diversity of strengths, ideally including individuals who demonstrate a balance of strengths in different leadership dimensions. But diversity goes well beyond team strengths. We have also discovered that the most engaged teams welcome diversity of age, gender, and race, while disengaged teams may do the opposite. For example, Gallup's research revealed that actively disengaged team members are 33% more likely to plan on leaving their job if they have a manager of a different race. However, when we study engaged teams, people are actually a bit more likely to stay with the company if they have a manager of a different race. So whereas a disengaged employee is more likely to quit his job if he has a supervisor of another race, an engaged employee is less likely to leave under the same circumstances. The most engaged teams look at individuals through the lens of their natural strengths, not at physical characteristics. This keeps the team focused on the potential within each person and minimizes the influence of superficial barriers. Fifth, strong teams are magnets for talent. Another way to spot a strong team is to look for the teams that everyone wants to be on. For some people, it may be hard to understand why anyone would want to join a team that works longer and harder and that comes complete with sky-high expectations. This is especially true when these IT teams are characterized by intense competition and extreme accountability for results. Yet despite all the consequences and pressure, it is your potential stars who most want to be on these teams. They see top teams as the most stimulating place to be, the place where they can demonstrate their leadership and have a real impact. Instead of being intimidated by the challenge and responsibility, they seek out these teams. As former United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan described in a leadership interview with Gallup, building a strong team within an organization requires the same basic ingredients of a successful soccer squad. Annan encourages the teams to play in a coordinated manner, but he is quick to point out that should not exclude individual brilliance. Annan explains that as long as the brilliant ones are pulling with us towards the same goal, this individual talent actually strengthens the collective team. As a result, successful teams often have an organization-wide influence. Building a strong team requires a substantial amount of time and effort. Getting the right strengths on the team is a good starting point, but it is not enough. For a team to create sustained growth, the leader must continue to invest in each person's strengths and in building better relationships among the group members. When leaders can do this, it allows the entire team to spend even more time thinking about the needs of the people they serve. Part 3. Understanding why people follow. The most effective leaders rally a broader group of people toward an organization's goals, mission, and objectives. They lead. People follow. Yet rarely do we examine why people follow. A majority of the research that has been conducted about leadership over the years, including Gallup's work in this area, could be missing one obvious point. You are only a leader if others follow. Leaders are only as strong as the connections they make with each person in their constituency, whether they have one follower or 1 million. Yet we continue to focus on leaders and all but ignore their impact on and the opinions of the people they lead. One problem is that we have studied leaders in isolation from the connections that make them great. As legendary investor Warren Buffett puts it, by definition, a leader is someone who can get things done through other people. So while leaders' opinions may be interesting to study, that might not be the right unit of measurement for understanding why a person follows one leader yet ignores the next. If you wanted to know why the President of the United States was making a difference in the lives of the American public, would you look to him for the best answers, or would you ask his constituents? When companies want to know why a product is popular, they ask their customers. So, if we want to know why people rally behind a leader, shouldn't we ask them why they follow, or how a great leader has improved their lives? If you want to lead, it is critical to know what the people around you need and expect from you. Why do people follow? To explore why people follow, Gallup conducted a formal study from 2005 to 2008. Our goal was to obtain the average person's opinion about leadership. Instead of allowing experts, historians, CEOs, celebrities, and politicians to define leadership for them. In sharp contrast to other leadership research, which is primarily based on case studies, interviews, research within one organization, or convenience samples, this study looked at a true random sampling of more than 10,000 followers who were contacted through the Gallup poll. This allowed our team to examine leadership that extends beyond an organization's walls, leadership that is taking place in social networks, schools, churches, and homes. After conducting preliminary testing with several questions, we decided to anchor our research around the following key question. What leader has the most positive influence in your daily life? Take a few moments to think about this question if you need to. Once you have someone in mind, please list his or her initials. Then if they listed someone, we followed up with this item. Now, please list 3 words that best describe what this person contributes to your life. Every word in this question was selected with extreme care. The first part forced each person to identify a specific leader who has the most positive influence in his or her daily life. The word positive was included to ensure that we were not studying leaders who have a predominantly negative influence. As Peter Drucker once said, the 3 greatest leaders of the 20th century were Hitler, Stalin, and Mao. If that's leadership, I want no part of it. After identifying a leader in the first part of this question, each person was asked to list 3 words to best describe what the leader contributes to the follower's life. This allowed our team to collect thousands of followers' open-ended responses, in contrast to asking them to select from categories based on theory, which would bias their responses. Instead of listing categories such as vision or purpose, which receive a lot of attention in the field of leadership study, We were determined to let the followers define how leaders make a difference in their own words. Upon completion of our initial surveys, we studied the 25 most commonly mentioned words. To our surprise, many of the usual suspects like purpose, wisdom, humor, and humility were nowhere near the top of the list. As we continued to review the descriptors, distinct patterns started to emerge. In some cases, more than 1,000 people had listed the exact same word without any categories or options provided. Given that there are more than 170,000 words in the English language, this was impressive. It seems that followers have a very clear picture of what they want and need from the most influential leaders in their lives. Trust, compassion, stability, and hope. Followers' four basic needs are trust, compassion, stability, and hope. Trust. One of the leaders we interviewed said, "The truth is your bond. You die keeping your promises. If you send the message that your word is not worth much, you'll be paid back on that." As various political and business scandals have illustrated, followers will not tolerate dishonesty. At any level, whether you are a manager, CEO, or a head of state, trust might be the do-or-die foundation for leading. The followers we surveyed also cited honesty, integrity, and respect as distinct contributions from the leaders in their lives. A serious breach in honesty can destroy a sitting president, the CEO of a major corporation, a friendship, or a marriage. At a less extreme level, people we have interviewed often speak about the way honesty, trust, and respect also serve as basic relationship filters that help them determine whom to spend time with in the workplace. Gallup's latest research on trust in leadership also suggests that this foundation is closely linked to employee engagement in an organization. One of our national polls revealed that the chances of employees being engaged at work when they do not trust the company's leaders are just 1 in 12. In stark contrast, the chances of employees being engaged at work are better than 1 in 2 if they trust the organization's leadership, a more than six-fold increase. Trust also increases speed and efficiency in the workplace. When two people working on a project do not know each other well, it takes a considerable amount of time for them to be able to collaborate productively. There can be a long getting-to-know-you period, a time during which two people warily look each other over. If you're unfamiliar with a colleague, it can take a while to get accustomed to her work style and personality. Once a basic level of trust is established between two people, they can make things happen in a fraction of the time that it takes other colleagues who don't have that bond. Trust allows people to skip most of the formality and immediately get to what is most important. As Kofi Annan explained, if you don't have a relationship, you start from zero each time. When you read organizations' mission statements, you'll notice that many of them espouse integrity, trust, and honesty. Who could argue? They speak to basic human ethics and explain how we build lasting relationships. Best Buy's Brad Anderson described trust as the most cherished and valuable commodity in a work environment. To learn more about this fundamental leadership need, we have been asking thousands of leaders this question for many years. How do you convince a person of your honesty? While one might expect a great leader to have an insightful answer to this question, the best leaders actually do not. Instead, they have a surprising, visceral, and almost hostile reaction to being asked. Top leaders often spout a response along the lines of, "I just am." Or, as one leader put it, "People just know. They see my behavior over time, and they know they can depend on me." Brad Anderson's key to building trust is being authentic, even if that means letting people see his flaws. As a leader, he feels no choice but to be very candid, even when delivering difficult news, because that is the only way to build trust. Respect, integrity, and honesty are the outcomes of strong relationships built on trust. They don't have to be discussed, just as top leaders know they should not have to waste time convincing someone of their honesty. Likewise, one of the most striking observations from our research on teams was how little successful teams talked about trust. On the contrary, the topic of trust dominated the discussions of struggling teams. This speaks to the fundamentals of how relationships develop in thriving organizations. Relationship flat out trumps competence in building trust. Compassion. Unfortunately, most leaders are hesitant to show genuine compassion for the people they lead, at least in the same way they would with a friend or family member. But the results of our studies suggest that it might be wise for these leaders to take a lesson from great managers who clearly do care about each of their employees. Caring, friendship, happiness, and love were other frequently mentioned words followers used when asked what leaders contribute to their lives. These words were not that surprising. Gallup has accumulated a mountain of evidence over the years on the impact of a caring manager. We have asked more than 10 million people to respond to the item, "My supervisor or someone at work seems to care about me as a person." And we found that people who agree with this statement are significantly more likely to stay with their organization, have more engaged customers, are substantially more productive, and produce more profitability for the organization. Obviously, a major challenge for organizational leaders is that it is difficult to establish close relationships throughout an organization with thousands of employees. When we asked followers more specifically about the organizational leaders and global leaders that have a positive influence, we found that people expect more general positive energy and compassion from high-level organizational or global leaders, compared to the much more intimate words like caring that followers use to describe everyday leaders. Or as Standard Chartered's Mervyn Davies explained, organizational leaders must have a positive bias because employees simply don't want to follow negative people around, in his words. On a more personal level, Davies' compassion was always shining through to Standard Chartered's employees. In addition to being very open with his own challenges as his wife battled breast cancer, Davies was just as concerned about his employees' mental and physical health. He initiated several programs aimed at helping employees to boost their overall well-being, and he always encouraged his direct reports to put their family first. He knew that for people to truly love their organization, it needed to have a heart. Stability. Followers want a leader who will provide a solid foundation. They reported that the best leaders were the ones they could always count on in times of need. The people we surveyed also mentioned the words security, strength, support, and peace. As a leader, your followers also need to know that your core values are stable. This will buffer them from unnecessary change and ensure that they know what is expected. Our need for stability and security plays into nearly every decision we make. Politicians work tirelessly to convince us that we will be more secure if they are elected. Spiritual leaders are often great promoters of stability as followers turn to their messages for strength in times of crisis or elation. Great teachers who lead in classrooms every day know the value of giving students constant support and reassurance. In the workplace, while it's critical for organizations to evolve, change, and grow over time, they must also offer employees stability and confidence. At a very basic level, employees need a paycheck, and they need to feel secure about having a job. If managers and leaders do not meet these basic needs, they are sure to face resistance. Employees who have high confidence in their company's financial future are 9 times as likely to be engaged in their jobs when compared to those who have lower confidence about their organization's financial future. When we spoke with Ritz-Carlton President Simon Cooper, it was clear that he viewed putting food on the table for families around the world as one of the most important elements of his job. He was as concerned about the general well-being of his hourly employees in Jakarta as he was about his wealthy guests. When it came time to think about expansion, Cooper was careful not to add new jobs that would have to be cut soon thereafter if there was an economic downturn. At a company-wide level, nothing creates stability as quickly as transparency. Followers need to have a basic sense of confidence about where their career is headed and how the organization is doing financially. At a large engineering company we worked with, all of the organization's data and financial metrics, with the exception of payroll information, are easily accessible to every employee in the company. They also provide employees with regular updates on progress toward organizational goals. And perhaps most importantly, leaders throughout the company help each employee see how he or she can directly affect the organization's key metrics like costs, profits, and sales. This gives employees stability and confidence and clears the way for rapid growth. Hope. This higher-level need poses an interesting challenge. It appears that followers want stability in the moment and hope for the future. Followers also mention the words direction, faith, and guidance when describing this basic need. When Gallup studied the impact that leaders can have throughout an organization, the single most powerful question we asked employees was whether their company's leadership made them feel enthusiastic about the future. 69% of employees who strongly agreed with this statement were engaged in their jobs, compared to a mere 1% of employees who disagreed or strongly disagreed. Based on these data, it appears that this may be the one area in which higher-level leaders can have the most influence in their organization. Instilling hope may seem like an obvious requirement for leading other people. Hope gives followers something to look forward to, and it helps them see a way through chaos and complexity. Knowing that things can and will be better in the future is a powerful motivator. When hope is absent, people lose confidence, disengage, and often feel helpless. This makes the role of an organizational leader even more important during difficult times. And yet the vast majority of leaders we interviewed did not spend enough time deliberately creating hope and optimism for the future. Instead, even the highest level executives reported that they spend almost all of their time reacting to the needs of the day instead of initiating for the future. Whether they realize it or not, leaders who are always reacting convey to the organization that they aren't in charge or control, but are being tossed about by the demands of the day. When leaders instead choose to initiate, the very act can create hope for the future. In response to a major economic downturn, one corporate chief we worked with confronted this leadership challenge head-on. In an address to thousands of his employees, he refused to react to this downturn by cutting spending or laying people off. Instead, he described how the company planned to gun it by hiring even more people than planned and by pursuing new areas of business even more aggressively. This kind of initiating creates hope and eliminates helplessness. In our research, we regularly ask leaders if they spend more time initiating or responding. While leaders are more likely to claim that they initiate, in reality, they spend the vast majority of their time responding. As part of this research, we provided leaders with several scenarios to prioritize, and in most cases, the leaders we studied did not choose the one option out of four total that involved initiating. Instead, their priorities were always dominated by a visceral need to respond. Even when we prompted leaders beforehand by asking if they spent more time initiating or responding, it seems that leaders couldn't help but be reactive. One challenge is that our ability to progress in our career is often determined by our effectiveness in responding to near-term needs. When high value is placed on solving these kinds of problems, it creates a culture in which leaders spend little or no time thinking about what could be done because they receive more accolades for simply doing what needs to be done. Another reason we get caught in perpetual response mode is because it's easier. Agreeing to take on a small objective, for example, cleaning out your inbox by the end of each day, is much more manageable than embarking on a larger and more proactive goal, like creating a new product or mapping out how to double your business in 3 to 5 years. Solving problems and removing barriers comes naturally to many people, while initiating is much harder work. While solving difficult problems is an essential part of effective leadership, identifying opportunities for the future plays a much more important role in creating hope and optimism. As Teach for America's Wendy Kopp demonstrated, it took a big vision and her activation of that idea to offer hope to thousands of teachers, students, and an entire nation. Kopp wrote in her book, "What I learned, in essence, was that if I was to fulfill my mission, it would take more than an idealistic vision. At the end of the day, the big idea was important and essential, but it would work only with a lot of attention to the nuts and bolts of effective execution." One of the greatest challenges for leaders is to initiate new efforts that will create subsequent organizational growth. If as a leader, you are not creating hope and helping people see the way forward, chances are no one else is either. Leadership that lasts beyond a lifetime. When we invest our financial resources, we understand that it's best to bet on winning funds, stocks, and companies. Most of us know better than to sink all of our money into a business that has consistently struggled. Yet when we think about how to invest our personal resources, we continue to put more time and energy into perennial losers. Instead of honing our natural strengths, we strive to fill in what nature left out. The most effective leaders know better than to try and be someone they are not. Whenever they spot an opportunity, they reinvest in their strengths. Wendy Kopp kept on achieving just as Brad Anderson continued to paint new pictures of the future. With this acute awareness of their strengths and limitations, these leaders were able to partner with the right people to create unprecedented growth. Leaders stay true to who they are, and then make sure they have the right people around them. Those who surround themselves with similar personalities will always be at a disadvantage in the long run to those who are secure enough in themselves to enlist partners with complementary strengths. As you could hear from the leaders we interviewed, they were always looking for people who could do specific things much better than they ever could. The most effective leaders also get people to follow. Reaching the level where your life's work and mission continue in perpetuity requires not only being a leader yourself, but developing the people who follow you to be more effective leaders as well.